Hello, and welcome to Is That Jazz Radio, 1125 FM. First minute, home of first minute of a new day, music and culture. One day I'll get that right, when I'm not so nervous at the start of each show. We're waiting for Mr. Homer Jackson to call in. Mr. Homer Jackson is the creative director and founder of the Philadelphia Jazz Project. His list of accolades go on and on. So without further ado, hello, Mr.
Hello.
Jackson. We are so honored to have you call into our station today. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you so much for allowing me to join you.
Well, that's great. Mr. Jackson, in researching for this interview, I can't help but be humbled by your efforts in music and art in general. And I find it, you know, a little comforting that we both served as teachers and social workers during our journey. So, Mr. Jackson, can you tell us a little bit about the Philadelphia Jazz Project before we talk about Jazz Day on this coming 13th?
The Philadelphia Jazz Project, to put it very briefly, is a dream project. It's an almost unbelievable story, and it starts about 30 years ago. 30 years ago, I was a fresh graduate student at Temple University, and previous to actually starting school, during the summer, I ran into a gentleman at a Sun Ra concert, and he invited me to come on the radio station at WRTI because I was a graduate student entering Temple University. And through the work that I did at WRTI, I met a gentleman on the radio who was a listener who was about my age, who would ask questions. And I would find out later that this gentleman was part of a philanthropic family. And we became friends, and a few of us that were on the air became friends with him, and we talked a lot. But over the years, I never asked him anything about any kind of resources or support around his philanthropy. And about 7 years ago, he reached out to me and invited me to an event and asked me if I would like to expand opportunities for jazz musicians and to reinvigorate jazz in Philadelphia. And since then, I've spent about $2.6 million doing that work. So it's been amazing. Something that it's sort of like the thing that you never know what can happen. Work that we did 30 years ago would give us an opportunity today.
You know, you mentioned your work and your experience at Temple University, and that this goes back 30 years. What was it like, and how did it help you during this journey to be affiliated with RTI and to host a weekly radio program for them?
Well, you know, it's looking back, I actually don't think we understood completely what was happening and what we were doing. One of the amazing things about WRTI at that time was that it was a completely jazz-centered radio station that was part of a university that also had a deep connection to the community. And we were all young people fascinated by jazz, which even then was, relatively speaking, a rarity. And I don't think we valued how young we were and how important what we were doing was. But to look at it today, it was an amazing laboratory where some really great people would come out of it. Michael Anderson, who is a producer for ESP Records, is an alumni of WRTI. Felix Hernandez from, I think he's at WBGO now, is another alumni. Richard Nichols, who was the manager and the silent partner with the Roots hip-hop group, was a member of the of our community. Steve Rowland, producer of the 11-hour Leonard Bernstein documentary on that's aired on NPR, is another alumnus. So we were an amazing group of young people fascinated by jazz, and I was very fortunate to be a part of that community. And then given the additional opportunity to do some more work today. So I'm really excited about what we've managed to do in our legacy and history.
I can just remember when we used to call it the point, and how when I wanted to impress the older fellas in the neighborhood, I would be playing chess and playing the point on the radio. Like, yeah, I'm cool, y'all. You accept me. And I also remember a show that helped shape one of the programs we're creating here on our station, Catharsis. I just found Catharsis. Found, you know, and that,
with Reggie Bryant.
That really, yeah, that was. We're trying to create something similar to that on our station, because can you imagine if you had Catharsis today in Philadelphia or any major city, a program with that format?
He was amazing. And, you know, another story about Reggie Bryant. Before I graduated or attended Temple as a graduate student, I attended what was called then Philadelphia College of Art, and it's today known as University of the Arts. And Reggie was my teacher, and the class that I had him for three classes, was called Gaming and Simulations. Reggie was a genius. He was a genius, and I was so fortunate to spend so much time with him as a young person.
Yeah, he was definitely one of my mentors. You know, a lot of folks wanted to be Dr. J and a bunch of other people, but I wanted to be Reggie and Wayne Joel. They were my heroes.
Great people to choose from, too.
Oh, no doubt, man. Moving on, what would you say are two maybe, I don't want to limit the list, but what would you say are some of the goals of the Philadelphia Jazz Project today?
Our goal is to expand the conversation about the music, expand the audience for the music, and expand creative possibility for the artists. You know, it's one thing to play. It's another thing to create. And our artists need opportunities to create new music, new pathways, new stories to tell, and new approaches to how to engage an audience. Those are the things that are really important.
Is there a youth outreach? Because in my travels and talking to people in New York and Mike, who I'm going to mention later about his efforts coming up here this week, are there any efforts to reach our youth? Because I strongly believe in, and I kind of mirror some of the conversations that I've been having, that in order for the arts form to survive, we have to reach our youth at a very young age, and so they can appreciate at least the jazz format. You have any thoughts on that, Jackson?
Well, yeah, I think it's really important. I think it's also very difficult.
Yes.
One of the issues that I think everyone around the country, particularly here, I mean, here in the United States, other people have other challenges as well, but it's how do you access young people? One of the most simple ways to access young people is through their educational experience, which is where they are three quarters of the year, essentially. But accessing
them, you mean the school system?
The school system, the educational establishment. It's not easy. It's not easy, and it's it can be expensive to actually engage young people through the school system. We have done collaborations with Parks and Recreation here in Philadelphia and the Free Library. So we're trying to get them where they are as much as possible. But I would say it is a challenge, and it's not as easy as it used to be to gain access to our schools. Maybe some of your listeners have who work in this, the educational establishment can share some ideas and ways that pathways for musicians or any other kinds of artists to be engaged. I mean, it's so clear that over the last 30 years, since I was a young, you know, a younger artist, we've seen the educational establishment, the school systems, reduce their funding for arts and move the arts to the side and focus more on scholastic testing. When historically we know that the arts have actually saved some people's lives and given focus to their educational experience, otherwise they would not have made it through school. So we need to join those things together so that we can both educate our young people and also come up with ways to help them to be able to express themselves and use the arts as a tool to make their lives more meaningful and develop ways to communicate with others.
You know, I once sat in on a conversation, was at an event where legend Derry Herbie Hancock spoke, and he argued and put forth a premise that jazz itself helps with math and science, you know. And I guess most recently I've seen bassist Marcus Miller, and to your point of trying to reach our youth where they are, right now trap music, for better or worse, is their music or their genre of choice. And he actually tried to create a jazz-centered song with a trap music theme. And it was, the attempt was valiant, but I imagine it reached the youth, but it kind of turned those of us that grew up even marginally thinking that, you know, Kenny G was jazz, I had a hard time gravitating towards it. So do you see any musicians, I can think of Robert Glasper, Terrence Martin, right offhand, that may be a tool in reaching our youth and just how they're expanding jazz? What a definition of it?
Well, a young lady from our community has a new LP coming out very soon, Arnetta Johnson. Arnetta's a trumpet player. She plays with Beyonce.
Okay.
And she's merged trap and drum and bass and a number of ethnic musics from around the globe. She has elements of Bhangra or Juju or High Life and reggae and reggaeton to as a bedrock for her improvisations. And you could say some of it reminds you of Miles Davis, Bitches Brew, and other things.
Okay.
But she's like, I find her music very exciting. And without, it's not compromising anything. She's not.
I understand that.
It's not weakened by. It reminds me of what Grover Washington did, another Philadelphian, where Grover,
right,
back in the early 70s, you know, would have these really funky bedrock, you know, for the music, but his solos were never thin or weak. He never lessened what he was doing. It was, that man was a master saxophonist. And it was always evident every time he played, brought his A game. And I think Arnetta Johnson, who's from Camden, New Jersey,
really?
A graduate of
New
Berklee
Jersey?
School of Music. Yep, Camden,
okay.
New Jersey. She's a beast, a tremendous trumpet player. So keep an eye out for Arnetta Johnson.
Okay. You know, we had a chance to interview Mr. Bill Jolly, who was Grover Washington's band director.
Yes, sir.
And his story was equally as amazing as yours. And I guess, you know, Grover, although we haven't, you know, we're a little bit dated to talk to him. But, you know, you guys are definitely inspiring in what you're doing, you know. And
well, I appreciate being named in the same company with Bill Jolly. Last summer, we presented a celebration for Grover Washington Jr. here in Philadelphia and it was a collaboration with WRTI, WXPN, Philadelphia Jazz Project, and Temple TPAC, the same space that the Jazz Industry Day will take place. And Bill Jolly was the music director for that concert, which also featured Gerald Veasley, Pablo Batista, Gerald Albright, and Najee, as well as Gene Corn. And they went through the Grover Washington songbook, and it was unbelievable. We think of Gerald Albright and Najee as, smooth jazz players. But they were, like, tremendously influenced by Grover Washington Jr., and they brought that Grover Washington Jr. A-game with them. And afterwards, they both told me they don't work as hard at their own concerts as they did at that show. It was, man, they played their hearts out. That was a show. It will be, we're editing the video right now.
Wow.
So in a couple of weeks, we'll have that video up so that folks can see what they, it was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Mr. Jackson, I had a chance to see Najee perform in what folks would call a standard straight-ahead jazz format.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of folks don't understand that these guys are talented all across the board. And,
that's right.
You know, I watched Najee hold his own among some greats, and I came away from that concert like saying, wow, you know. But before we move on.
He is a player.
Yes, he is a player.
There's no – and he also told a story that at 13 years old, he and his brother – came down to Philly, caught the train, came down to Philly, and knocked on Grover Washington Jr.'s door.
I can believe it.
And created a relationship. They had a relationship with Grover from the time that they were 13 until the time he died. He was their mentor.
I want to touch on that before we end the show and just talk about the Philadelphia jazz community in general.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I talked with Robert Glasper a couple of years ago, and he expressed to me that, you know, he doesn't see competition as necessary, that when one succeeds, we all succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And I want the audience to know that I made a call to Mr. Jackson, and without hesitation, I'm coming on your show. I spoke to Jeff Bradshaw. Hey, man, I'm riding on a train, but I'm coming on your show. You know, Bill Jolly, you know, the warmth and the outreach that you guys have, I just think our audience, you know, we have an international audience, they need to know, man, that Philly, it really, when it comes to music, it's the home of brotherly love. Can you touch on that a little?
Absolutely. Baraka, Mary Baraka, who was one of my mentors, you know, when he talks about the music, he says, like, it comes out of Detroit, Philadelphia, and Newark, New Jersey. And when you look at and the music for him is that bebop and beyond. And when look at you do a roll call of those artists coming up in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, you start to see this massive influx of artists coming out of Philly, Detroit, and Newark. And when you think about, you know, Wayne Shorter and Sarah Vaughan are from Newark, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
The Grover, who is from Buffalo but was adopted by Philadelphia, and McCoy Tyner, Charles Frambro, John Coltrane, who comes from North Carolina but came on the scene out of Philadelphia, Archie Shepp, who comes from Florida but who comes out of the scene from Philadelphia, and Benny Golson, Jimmy Heath, Ted Kersen. All of these folks are coming out of Philadelphia. The legendary Hassan, Philly Joe Jones,
mm-hmm.
Con Jamal, Byard Lancaster, Sonny Murray. It's like, it's an unbelievable array of musicians, Johnny Coles, who come out of this city. And those are the people that we know who are on the international and national scene. Then it is that layer of other folk who never left the city, but who were geniuses and masters, like Edgar Bateman and Little Jimmy Oliver, or Mittie Middleton. It's just an amazing group, or Odean Pope for that matter. It's just an amazing community of musicians. And then, like, you could think of a young person who is a protege of those guys, a Jamaluddin Takuma, who has had a major input. Jamaluddin Takuma is, you know, connected to the Roots' success and their opportunity. I think he was the first person to take them on tour.
Right.
He's impacted a whole new generation of musicians, and now those musicians that he helped are helping other people do it. So that's a Philly thing. We produce these great people.
You know, we're going to bring Mr. Jackson back on our radio station in October, and we're going to ask him to go in great lengths about the people who he just mentioned and about the jazz scene here in Philadelphia, the historic value that it has, because I think that's a conversation that deserves a lot more time. So we're going to end with the Philadelphia Jazz Industry Day. And for me, wow. You know, I met Mr. Ritchie in New York with a jazz conference that was somewhat similar. And it blows my mind to think that Philadelphia can put their hat in an arena and have folks come from all over the country to celebrate this unique art form called jazz. And we have Mr. Jackson here, who's primarily responsible for this day also. So can you start off by telling us what this day means to you and describe some of the events that the people who attend, they'll be blessed to, you know, witness and to take part of?
Well, I think we should start with the idea that, you know, jazz is at a crossroads. We have to make some decisions for the long-term impact of this art form and this industry. For years, the focus of the industry has not necessarily been about the artists themselves, and the artists have sort of taken a back seat to everybody else. And that, in my mind, has been the long-term detriment to the musicians themselves. It's very important for the musicians to step up and take more control, have more authority, and have much more input in the trajectory of where the musical industry should be moving towards.
Exactly.
So this opportunity is very different, because it's not a complete— the traditional thing for jazz, the jazz conferences, is that the institutional people come together and, you know, talk about those issues and concerns that are completely set up for themselves. This isn't that kind of thing. This is really more about the artists connecting with connecting with and becoming the industry. And for me, as a, you know, I'm a visual artist. I'm not a musician. I've always sensed and felt that, and I felt some of this as a visual artist in our world too, that there's a circling of the wagon sometimes at these conferences, and folks are just taking care of each other, the institutional people. And when I mean circling the wagons, instead of making the pie bigger and using more apples, we end up with less pies and less slices for everyone to get. So you circle the wagon and you say that everything's fine, when instead of having 10 slices of pie like you did last year, you only have 5. And instead of us with this, you know, there's probably more jazz musicians today than there were in the 50s, based on what our schools put out every year. But the opportunities and the pies are smaller. So it's important for us to come together and talk about how we can expand the possibilities, and most important, expand the audience. So that's that's part of my mission, and Michael Richie shares the same point of view. So we've been talking and collaborating on a number of different things over the last few years, and this is something that he's really been excited about. Now, Jazz Industry Day is about a six-hour, seven-hour event where there's a number of workshops, discussions, presentations, and in particular, there's a Meet the Experts session directly for musicians that will present a number of different topics and a number of different speakers. One of the speakers is Lovett Hines, who's the artistic director of the Philadelphia Jazz, the Clef Club,
historic
institution that was developed by that comes out of the Black Musicians Union. And we have consultant Candace Kilstein, who's going to talk about entrepreneurship for artists. And then we have folks who are going to discuss how to deal with the press and how to pull together PR. And they're from a consulting firm called New Media, DL Media. That's Matthew Jurasek and Maureen McFadden. We have folk talking about financing and budgeting. And that's Sarah Leonard, who's one of the developers of Jazz Industry Day. She's from Brilliance Media and Jazz Lives Philadelphia. And J. Michael Harrison, who is a very important part of Jazz Industry Day. He and I and Michael Richie have been talking about this for quite a while and worked on the two previous smaller events. J. Michael Harrison is going to talk about radio and the music ecosystem. And give people a sense about how do you get your stuff heard on radio or in media itself. Anthony,
well, you
Kidd,
know I'm
who,
the front row of that session with no pad in hand.
Oh yeah, and Mike J. Michael talks a lot about, you know, this is goes back to the thing I said earlier about going to conferences. One of the things he said is he's been to many conferences, and one of the things that people, media people, tend to talk about is how much stuff they receive, but don't actually listen to. And,
right.
You know, his whole point of view is that, you know, part of the role of the media is that we're the librarians. We're the people who are responsible for keeping this data, this archive of this music and the story of this music. And we shouldn't take that lightly. And the goal is to listen to what everybody has to say and what everybody has to offer. You know, you think about jazz music itself. Jazz music comes from the least of these. This music
right.
doesn't come from the people who are supposedly the most important. This
mm-hmm.
music comes from the people who are supposed to be the dregs. So if it was, you
exactly.
know, it's that Jesus story in music. You know, what good can come out of Bethlehem? You know, so that matter, what good can come out of New Orleans? What good can come out of North Philly? Lee Morgan
exactly.
can come out of North Philly. John Coltrane can come out of North Philly. You
Clifford
know,
Brown could come out of the east side of Wilmington, Delaware.
There you go. There you go. So it's like that's J. Michael's mission, and he really is, you know, urging other people in the industry to start to feel the same way, to let your ears decide, not let, you know, influence, somebody's wallet, somebody's resume determine what's what. And the music was always about whoever can blow, can blow.
Exactly.
That's what matters. So there's a bunch of different experts who are coming. Tim Warfield, the saxophonist, who's going to come and talk about contracts, negotiations, and how to get paid. You can't beat that. You cannot beat that. Bobby Zankel, who's the executive director, he's a saxophonist and executive director of Warriors of the Wonderful Sound, is going to talk about how to get your work and or your work heard and finding your niche as an artist. Like, where do you fit in this
exactly.
industry? Because that's not easy. That's not easy. It takes a minute to find your place. So we also
well,
going
folks,
to have,
we're going
to
end this conversation just because a matter of time here at the station. We're going to invite Mr. Mr. Jackson to come back after the conference is over and share his thoughts with us. Will you do that, sir?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you. And, again, we'll be at the show. We're going to, I guess, get some on-site interviews. And, Mr. Jackson, I'm very honored to have met you over the phone, and thanks for the time, sir.
Thank you, and I hope to see you on Thursday. I'll be running around like crazy, but we'll take some time.
Yes, we will, and I'll make it a point to introduce myself. You have a very great day, sir, and thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Have a good afternoon.
Have a great afternoon, folks out there in Radio Land.
Yes, sir. We'll be at the Jazz Industry Day in Philadelphia this Thursday. Stay tuned,
folks.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Have a great evening.
Bye-bye.
All right.